This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 51, where I talk with Grace Batts about her poem, Worlds. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, I'm Grace Batts, and this is my poem, Worlds. If the multiverse is real, you didn't like me in any of them. You liked what I represented, but not my reality. Somewhere in the multiverse, there was never one where we worked out. Nothing that messed us up, no one that stepped on the butterfly. You just didn't like me that much. In the pantheon of futures that you created, I didn't exist. I was only ever a placeholder for what could have been, or who could have been, according to my friends. I didn't exist in your world, but you were all mine consisted of.
Oh, thank you. So what was your inspiration for this?
This kind of came from like two places. The strangely enough, a lot of it came from the new Spider-Man movie and like the like theory of like the multiverse and things like that. And then it came from like a person who was like in my life for a very short amount of time and then just kind of like left very quickly. And I was thinking like, if I was Spider-Man, would this have happened differently if there was like 47 universes?
It's funny because that was my initial thought too. I was like, oh, this sounds like Spider-Man. And then I was like, this reminds me of something that I learned in, I don't even know what class it was. Maybe it was just on my own, but about like the different dimensions. I went into this whole like rabbit hole in like different dimensions. And how like the fifth or sixth dimension, I don't know which one it is, but like it's where all possible worlds exist. Like all the versions of yourself where you had made like the slightest different decision and like all living at the same time. It just made me think like, it's crazy to think about what it would be like if all the versions of myself like met and I could see like all the possible versions of my life. Yeah. All the different like people I could be in, like the paths I could go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's so interesting. It also kind of, I talk about a little bit in this poem, like the butterfly effect of like, if one thing changed, like what could have happened? And I think that's like a really interesting thing of like, what in your past have you done or didn't do that you would change to like for a future result?
Yeah. And then there's that whole like, was it the grandfather thing? Grandfather effect or something? I don't know. Or grandparent, or like, you go back in time to change something. Yeah, your grandparents never met, your parents never born, you were never born, that kind of thing. Yeah. Like time travel. It's so interesting to me because it's like, there are so many things that sometimes I'm like, if only that didn't happen. Like, what if I could change that small little thing that I said or that I did? And then this whole relationship or this whole outcome would be completely different. But then I don't think I would like it if it was that different. Like, you know, there are other things I would have to sacrifice for it to be like that.
It's like the key point of being like an overthinker of like, what have I done in the past to like shape where I am now and would I do something differently? And a lot of times the answer is no, but sometimes you're like, what could have happened?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting to think too, like, for big life events or big changes or decisions you've made, like I don't know, if you decided to end a friendship that was really toxic, like what if you hadn't ended it? What if you kept being friends? Like, how would your friendship have changed? How would you have changed? That kind of thing. And I think about that a lot because I had a lot of friendships in middle school that were really bad and I had to like stop talking to a lot of people. But like, what if I hadn't stopped talking to them? What if I had just kept engaging in that really toxic relationship in the back and forth of like just being really awful? Like, how would I be different?
Yeah, I had the beautiful privilege of the last like 3 months of my middle school career being in a global pandemic. So that was really nice because it was like forced cutting off of friendships that I probably didn't need anymore, because you really, I think quarantine really revealed like who your friends are because you didn't talk to them. So that was, I was kind of thankful for that, that I didn't have to go through cutting them off. It just kind of naturally drifted.
Yeah, and then it's been interesting to see too, like friends who you're really close to drift off too, and kind of how your lives have like taken on different paths. But yeah, that's great that you didn't have to go through middle school. I mean, I had a different middle school experience too, because I was homeschooled, so I didn't have like the constant like school part of it, but still had the like the emotional part of it, I think, was a lot. And all of my friends went to public school, and so in a way I was like emotionally a part of it too.
Middle school's more of a feeling than a reality.
Yeah, I think so too. It's really like a mindset, if you will.
The ages of just like 11 to like 13 are just
tumultuous.
An interesting time.
It was a lot. Looking back on it, I'm like, wow, that was a lot that I went through. A lot that I did and said.
I moved to Vermont like right before middle school. And then so I just had to like start totally fresh. And then I only got like 3.5 years of middle school, and then global pandemic.
But luckily, maybe.
Yeah, no, I'm like such an introvert, so I haven't hated the pandemic so much. Now I'm sick of it.
Early 2020, I was fine too. I was just kind of going with the flow, doing my homework. I was still homeschooled at that point, so I was just kind of in my comfort zone. And then I started college last fall, and that was kind of like a big change. And my whole idea was that, all right, I'll have this semester last fall, like online, kind of ease into it. And then by 2021, I'll have all my classes in person. I'll be like really immersed in it, blah, blah, blah. And I am really immersed in it. I'm like super into everything at my college, but it's all online still. So it's like, yeah. It's still different from what I expected it to be.
Yeah, that's hard. And like, I'm nearing being a second semester sophomore in high school, and I've never eaten at my school's cafeteria and like a normal high school experience, whatever that means.
Yeah, like I took one class in person. It was a ceramics class, and we had to stay in the basement of the building of my school, and we weren't allowed to go upstairs. We couldn't go to the front desk. We couldn't go into any of the other classrooms. So like, I literally don't know what my school looks like what my campus looks like. So it's very weird. But that brings me to another line that I wanted to talk about was, you liked what I represented, but not my reality. And I think that idea of like idealized versus real kind of comes up in a lot of things that I write about, physical places, relationships, even myself too, like what I kind of imagine my future self to be versus what I actually am.
I think that is like kind of like interesting to think about, like, was I like a placeholder in this situation, or was like whatever, like just kind of like the nice like representation of like what you want in the future or what I want in the future, and then like thinking of what the reality behind it was.
Yeah, being a placeholder, just kind of like imagining what you want things to be. And I think kind of like idealizing things to be like more perfect than they actually are, saying like trying to settle in a way. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, but yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Of like kind of accepting what you have, but then making it different in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Next year, this will be all good. But like right now, I'm okay with what I have.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as soon as this happens, everything will be great. But right now, it's meh. So another line, no one stepped on the butterfly. We talked about that a little bit ago. But like, I saw as the butterfly effect, where like one small action leads to a big action. But I also saw as kind of like, in this relationship, no one kind of damaged this precious thing. You know, like, it was just kind of left to fly free and be its own thing and not be trampled by reality and expectations and heartache and all these other things. Is that kind of what you had thought?
Yeah, so when I originally wrote it, I was more so referencing the butterfly effect, but then I kind of like, once I stepped back and like had finished it, I kind of thought more about like that, of that no one, it wasn't anyone's fault what happened. Like, this thing kind of just lived by itself in its own being. But then I guess that wasn't like originally the meaning, but then I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we'll go with that.
I feel like that happens to me so often when I'm writing, is that I'm like, that's not really what I meant, but sure, that sounds good. Or like sometimes I'm like, I accidentally type the wrong word, or I delete a word and I'm like, oh wait, I've got to add that back. And then I'm like, wait, it actually sounds better like this. Something I do a lot is I'll write out like actual sentences and then I'll like cut off random words. So it doesn't make like complete sense. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And then something else I've been doing recently with my poetry, because I haven't been writing a whole lot lately, but a little bit, I've been doing a lot of like hyphenated words, which is actually pretty interesting too, but just kind of like, how can I accidentally make this poem sound cool?
Yeah, no, because like I'm currently this semester taking like a creative writing class, so it's really interesting because I started writing before I took it. It's really interesting to be like taught like how you can make your poetry and your writing like different or more like, not like stereotypical, but like classic. And my teacher, she's like, you can just put in words or take out words or hyphenate things or add syllables, delete syllables. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I remember in a creative writing class that I was in a couple of years ago, one of our assignments, I think, or like exercises, was to use a noun as a verb, I think. I can never remember like what a noun is and what a verb is, but like mine was peanut butter. I chose as like my thing. It was like, how can you peanut butter something? It was like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, you peanut butter your hands together, like you hold hands really tightly or really sticky or something. So that was a really fun exercise, which I haven't thought about since, but it just reminded me of it.
I think it's really interesting when you like do things like that, is how can this one thing have a totally different meaning, especially when like you use nouns as verbs.
Yeah. And something else I've been doing, I've been really into like wordplay recently. I don't know why, but I think I'm just trying to get more experimental with my poetry, because maybe I've just kind of like gotten bored of it. I think I might have like reached a point where I'm like, okay, this is nice, but I want to take it to the next level. So now I'm trying to experiment with a lot of my poetry, but what I've been doing is I've been doing like words that have double meanings, or that like sound the same but mean different things, and that kind of thing, like burrow and burrow, where like you hide under, or like the boroughs of New York City. So like that kind of thing, and kind of like swapping them out, and then how that can have a double meaning too. So, or like yielding can have a bunch of different meanings. So
yeah, no, that makes like a lot of sense to kind of try and do that and like see where you can like elevate your writing to.
Yeah, and it's always fun to like see what you end up with, kind of just like painting with no end goal in mind, or like doing any kind of art with no end goal in mind, and just kind of seeing where it takes you and what you end up with.
Because like sometimes like prompted writing can be really fun, because like you kind of have like a spark to start with, but also just like writing words on paper, or like typing them, and then just like seeing where you finish, and then like kind of shaping it into its final project can be really good.
Yeah, and something I used to do too a lot was I would like write out a bunch of words on an index card and then like cut them all out and then rearrange them. I did that a lot too. And then for the longest time, I don't know how long it's been, but like years and years, we've had these like this one pack of Shakespeare magnets, and they're these little word magnets, but they're all from like Shakespeare poems. And then you can like rearrange them into your own poems. And so for a long time when I was younger, I would make them. And I think they're all still in our fridge. They've been there for years and no one's ever taken them off. And I think that was a lot of fun too, was seeing like, how can I make a poem out of this limited supply of words? And then how can I change them too by like cutting off an S or cutting off other words or that kind of thing?
Yeah, my English teacher last year had like a bunch of those like little word magnets on the side of his filing cabinet. And you could just, like, at any, almost any time during class, just, like, get up and go, like, make a poem. And then he, so he does a really cool thing. He reads, like, a poem of the day. And then sometimes if he liked, like, the filing cabinet one, that would be the poem of the day. So I always tried to see, like, how can I write a poem on this filing cabinet and be the poet of the day?
That sounds like a lot of fun and definitely something I would do too.
I think I don't know how many poems I wrote on that filing cabinet and then like should have like saved somewhere or like should have taken a picture of it, like written down, because now I look back and I was like, oh, that was so good.
Yeah, I always like mourn the poems I didn't save or the ones that like sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep, I'll like write poems in my mind, which is great because I don't know, it just like uses my mind. But the like bad part about it is that if I don't write down the poem and I come up with something really good, I'm not going to remember it. And so I was so grateful the other night. I had like been writing something in my mind and I woke up and I remembered it and I wrote it down. I was like, okay, this is progress. We're doing great.
I will sometimes like start a poem with like no intention of finishing it and just kind of like chip away at it. But then I'll come up with a line and I'll be like, that is so good. And then go and do something else and be like, I'll remember it. I never do.
Mm-hmm. And me too. I think a lot of what I've been doing lately is just kind of like random lines that I think of. And I was writing a poem last night and it was just like all over the place. And I was like, okay. The thing with this is that I haven't written in so long that I have so many ideas and I'm trying to put them all in one poem. So I'm going to try to like split it apart into different sections because they all have like different tones for some reason. So yeah. I'm trying to see like, how can I rearrange this so that like it actually makes sense and it's like one coherent poem and not a bunch of like side thoughts.
I like over the summer came up with a line that I was like at work. And I couldn't, like, either, like, write it down or put it on my phone. So I, like, took the pen off of my clipboard and, like, wrote it on the back of my attendance sheet. And then I, like, handed in my attendance sheet for the end of the day. And my boss was like, Grace, what's this? I was like, oh, I gotta remember that.
I know, I do that too. I was, like, making lunch the other day. And I was trying to, like, finish my poem in my mind because I was, like, I was trying to make it like a rap for some reason, but it wasn't coming out that well. But anyway, I was in the middle of making lunch and I was like, oh, this is a great idea. And I wrote it down. I was like, oh, that's a great idea too. And I just kept writing down all these lines. So it's funny how like inspiration comes at the most random times and how like I'm always just writing down whenever I can. So another line, your ending. I didn't exist in your world, but you were all mine consisted of, which I think is really cool because it can be applied to relationships, but also things like goals, maybe in your future. And for me, I thought of colleges because I'm transferring to another college next fall. And so like, I don't exist in the minds of these admissions counselors, but you know, the college is all that I think about and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that something I really liked about that line is it could be interpreted in all these different ways. And it kind of is like, I think it probably when I wrote it was more about like a relationship and being like you, I didn't really matter to you, but you were the only thing that mattered to me. And then kind of like over the course of writing it and finishing it, it was like, it could just mean anything that anyone wants it to be of like, I like want to exist in someone else's mind because they exist in mine and things like that.
Yeah, wanting it to be kind of more equal and less like I'm putting all my energy into you and you don't even know that I exist, which is what a lot of my crushes were like when I was younger. I had a lot of like really big crushes and I'd like obsessed over these people and then like they literally had no idea who I was.
Like that total like one-sided like I am in love with you but you like I sit across from you in math but you don't even understand that I am a person.
Yeah, or like I met you once at a poetry open mic and now I'm planning our wedding and you don't even remember meeting me. That was my whole thing. But I think it's so interesting too how like that line and actually a lot of the lines in this piece can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. And I think that that's kind of something really nice to have in a poem, is that there's a lot of room for interpretation.
Yeah, I think I like some of my other poems are like a lot more specific, but I think this one was more like open-ended. Like, it kind of starts, like, obviously about a relationship, and then there are, like, some lines that could be, like, that doesn't have to be about, like, a person.
Another thing about it is that it kind of reminded me of, like, an indie song, which could just be because I've been listening to a lot lately. I got Spotify Premium for Christmas, so now I've just been listening, like, nonstop. I have a Spotify problem. I
do, too.
I really do. I have, like, 700, like, songs, and I got Spotify Wrapped a couple of weeks ago, and it said I spent like 35,000 minutes listening, which I'm not proud of.
20,000 minutes or something.
Yeah, I was like, 35,000 minutes? That's kind of a lot. But anyway, my point is that I saw a lot of the lines in here as like a potential song lyric, like an indie song specifically, though, like you just didn't like me that much, or no one stepped on the butterfly. I feel like those could definitely belong in this song. Like
I think I draw a lot of like inspiration from things that I listen to, and I think when I wrote this, I was listening to a lot of Phoebe Bridgers and a lot of Leanna Firestone.
I was gonna say Phoebe Bridgers.
I think that kind of just like they worked their way into the poem like without my control, and it just kind of accidentally sounded like them. And I think like my one greatest inspiration in life, Miss Taylor Swift, I love her so much. I think I don't think I write like her, because I sometimes try to like emulate people in my writing, and I feel like I'll gravitate towards like writing nuances and people like Phoebe Bridgers, but then I'll kind of gravitate towards themes and people like Taylor Swift, which I think can be like interesting, and not necessarily like writing like they do, but like writing about similar things.
Yeah, I think that's cool too, is like picking the different type of writing from each one, like theme from one person and then like tone from another. I don't know if I like consciously take inspiration from songs. I think that it may just be like one word that I overhear, or one kind of idea. Like growing up, I write so many poems about growing up, but like if I listen to a song about that, then I'll be like, oh, that would be a good theme for another poem, or one word that I hear, like a car or midnight or something, like something kind of vague, and then that inspires me. I think like the more vague it is, the more inspiration I can take from it. But I have actually, now that I think about it, I wrote a couple of songs based on, or poems based on songs by Lorde. I don't know which one it was.
I think this was more like thematic towards Lorde, but like I feel like Ribs inspired like a lot of my poems about growing up.
That's the one I was just looking up.
A lot, because that one's about growing up. So
yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I was just looking at the lyrics. It is that one that I wrote. One of the lines is, "It drives you crazy getting old." And then that was what I used to write a whole poem. That whole album, the whole Pure Heroine album, is just so good. And then Melodrama too is so good.
Yeah.
I feel like what she does really well is like capturing like an entire story in like just a few words. Yeah. And like there was this whole thing on YWP about like 6-word stories. That was a thing that people did for a while, like a challenge or something. I think even it had its own section at one point. Like Tiny Writes has its own section. There's one for 6-word stories. But anyway, Lorde did this interview or something that I saw, and she had said that she likes to do a lot of like 6-word stories kind of like in her lyrics. And one of them was Every Perfect Summer is Eating Me Alive. And I was like, oh, that's so good. And it's like 6 words.
I think like even like a whole story in like 2 or 3 minutes is just so like wild to me that like Lorde and people like her can like tell something so vast in such a short amount of time. I think I feel like that's very true, and the most true in Moral of the Story by Ash, where like she tells the whole story of her divorce in like 2 minutes. And I think
Yeah, that like it's like fast-paced storytelling, or like I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like just being able to describe the story in a really vivid but like simple way too, because like with songs you can't get into like really big words because no one's going to want to sing along to it, so it's got to be like kind of simple language, but you can still be really expressive with it.
Or like poetry, you can kind of more say whatever you want to tell your story. I think that is kind of interesting. And then like trying to play with that like more simple language. And then also like throwing in words like pantheon.
Yeah, exactly. And like maybe that could be in a song, but I feel like it fits more in a poem kind of scenario. But yeah, that's so interesting, like taking inspiration from songs. And I feel like that kind of goes hand in hand, like if you're a musician or if you have some kind of like musical background too, because then that kind of helps you like understand the nuances of sound. And like that kind of transfers into your writing, or at least for me, because I took piano lessons for 12 years. And so I was really into the whole like classical piano world and like the nuances of like sounds and tempo and rhythm and that kind of thing. And I think it maybe subconsciously transferred over into how I write my poetry, because now I feel like I'm kind of really aware of sound of my poems and kind of the rhythm of it and just making it kind of sound right in a way.
Yeah, no, like I did like chorus and musical. I still do musical theater for a very long time. So I kind of like have that like subconscious understanding of like how things sound and like how words can be expressed. And I think that kind of definitely helped give me like a backbone when I started like writing seriously, that it kind of just helped like feed the understanding of how words work together.
Yeah, exactly. I love how you describe that too. Like, it kind of builds your understanding of how to put together words to make a pretty sound in some way, or to
Yeah.
make a not so pretty sound. Because I feel like sometimes poetry, I feel like it has to be pretty in some way, but it's still nice to have poetry that's kind of not pretty or shocking.
Like uncomfortable almost.
Yeah, like I think about slam poems and how like the people who read them, it can sometimes be a really pretty description, or like I'm just saying pretty, but like beautiful or like
Yeah.
expressive or something. But it's said like in a really kind of aggressive way, or kind of in a really uncomfortable context. And spoken word is like, it's always been so cool to me, because it's like I don't feel like when I read my poems, I feel like I'm kind of a bit dull with them, where I just kind of like read them in the same tone. But spoken word, it gets like so many different layers of it.
I kind of like coming from that theater background, I think I don't even like notice that I kind of read a lot of my poems like a spoken word. It's just like how I say things. And I think that kind of like helped me because if I say it out loud, I can kind of like understand what I'm saying more.
Yeah, me too. I've been reading my poems out loud for a while, actually, to kind of, like as I'm working on them, kind of like how would this sound if someone else read it, or how would this sound when I read it, and that kind of thing.
Makes sense.
So, some other questions. How did you first discover creative writing and poetry?
I think I just kind of came like naturally. There wasn't like something that like really like changed my perspective on it. My dad writes like significantly for his job, not like creative writing, but still he's always been like a writer. And then I did it kind of like for fun and like wrote little things here and there. But then last year, I think a lot of it changed when I had that English teacher who like read a poem every day. I was like, oh, this is something that I can do. And I think that kind of like changed it. So I started doing it like more seriously. And then over this past like 2021, kind of was like, okay, so this could be a reality. You could do this.
I think that's great. And I think I'm always talking about like the importance of having a good English teacher or like a good English mentor.
Yeah, 100%, because I feel like there are some classes that you take that are like helpful but aren't gonna like change your life. But I feel like if you have like that really good English teacher, like so much can happen from it.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely been my experience too. And like science classes or math classes where like you understand the subject and like you do the work and you submit it on time and it gets graded. And it's just kind of like a transactional thing in a way where like, I'll give you my homework, you'll give me a grade, I'll finish the class, I'll be happy, that kind of thing. But like, I don't really remember that much from it. And like, I haven't taken a math class in like a year and I don't remember like really anything from it. So it's like that hasn't really lasted. But then English classes that I took in middle school, like several years ago, I still remember like completely clearly because I was so much more engaged. My teachers were so much more engaged. And like, there's a more personal feel where like I was writing about personal topics and they were giving me feedback or advice or something. And so it felt like more of a kind of, I don't really know how to describe it, kind of like a push and pull in a way.
That kind of like the difference between like the transactional world of like more like STEM-based classes where it's like, you can't really give me like feedback on my work. There's like a right and a wrong. In English, there's more room for your teachers to be like give feedback and give advice and things like that. So I think more often than not, people find that like inspiration and like turn from an English teacher. And I think that's so cool.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's exactly like what I was trying to say. And like, that's exactly what I think is that I think that's why I've always been more into English classes. And like, I do find science stuff interesting sometimes, but I'm always more interested in like the English / humanities side of it, where like there is more room for interpretation. Even like with math, it's like right answer, wrong answer, but with writing, for example, like there's a lot of different right ways and wrong ways you can go, and sometimes within one sentence you're going a right way and a wrong way. So it's like just kind of having more room for interpretation and discussion, I think.
Yeah, like where math is so like black and white, English and humanities classes kind of like live and like breathe in that like gray area between like you determine what's right and what's wrong and what's true and what's false.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting thing too, because like I'm always relating things to growing up, but like I feel like that's a lot of what like young adulthood is too. It's in that like very gray area, because when you're a kid, like things are black and white, like don't touch the oven if it's hot, you'll get burned, don't go running in the street because you'll get hit by a car, or like always say thank you when someone gives you something, or hold hands when you cross the street. Like, you know, there's a right thing to do and a wrong thing to do. And then when you're an adult, like pay your taxes on time and fill your car up with gas, don't do this and don't do that. And so it's like you have these responsibilities as an adult and like these rules as a child. But then when you're a young adult, like between, I don't know, teenage and then like maybe mid-20s, late-20s, it's kind of that room. Yeah. Or coming of age. It's that time where you can like kind of discover how you want to define yourself in your world and that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like a lot of times, like, being a teenager can be, like, a spectrum. There are some things that are, like, more correct than others, but you kind of have to get there on your own. That's when people start, like, saying to you, maybe you shouldn't do that. But also, like, I think you kind of lose, like, not in, like, a full capacity, but people telling you, like, don't touch the stove, it's hot. You kind of more have to, you have to touch the stove to figure out that it's hot.
Ooh, such a cool metaphor. I totally agree though. And I think that's something that's so interesting is that like you're kind of just left to discover the kind of roles and responsibilities on your own. Do the wrong thing to figure out the right thing. But that's something that's so interesting.
You have to determine what's right and what's wrong by yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of like confusion comes in, a lot of like doubt, and then a lot of changes, and just kind of like going through phases too. And of course, going through different relationships and trying on different personas and all that. But like, I feel like that's a really interesting time too, to like do self-discovery and like write and really like record what's going on.
I think like, even if you look at like the things that I wrote a year ago, they're so different than what I write now. And that's just like in the span of a year. So I think that's like an interesting jump to make, because you change so rapidly during like your coming of age years.
Yeah. And for me too, like I was at this, my pen just fell. I was at this thing last night for my honor society. It was just like end of the year wrap up, kind of reflections on this year and what you want to have for next year. And it was just so interesting because it was like thinking about who I wanted to be last year. Like when I did reflections last year of like how 2020 and how 2020 went and what I want 2021 to be like, it was like just kind of vague. And then now looking towards my future, I'm like, okay, I want to do this, I want to do that, like very specific goals that I have in mind. So it's like within a year my like personality kind of and my maturity has changed a lot, and now my focus is on very more like adult things. But then with my writing too, I think I've also matured a bit and taken on a much different voice than what I had even like over the summer too. Like at the beginning of the year, I think I kind of started to take on a different tone and voice in my poems, and now I'm really starting to see a difference.
Yeah, it's kind of like that general like fine tuning of like the tone and voice that you write in. It takes time to like figure out, and that it'll inevitably change, and like you'll say new things and talk about different topics.
Yeah, I feel like voice is always something that I'm kind of working on or towards or with or whatever, and just kind of trying to figure out like, what is my voice? Like, how do I want to write this? Like, what, I don't know, I guess like, what is my take on this? So another question, classic Lambert question, what books and authors have shaped you as a writer and a human being?
So the book that I credit like my love of like reading and writing is The Miraculous Journey of Edward Tulane. I don't remember who. Oh, Kate DiCamillo, that's who it's by, I'm pretty sure. Sorry if I'm wrong. But I think I read that in like fourth grade, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is cool, I'm gonna keep doing this. And then I like kept reading, and then I read it in like early quarantine, Heroine by Mindy McGinnis, which is like, I think it's nonfiction, I don't really know, but it's a narrative about like a teenage girl who gets in a car accident and like her struggles with addiction after that. And it's just written so well that I was like, I want to talk about people like this. Like, I want to write about people and their like perspectives on things, because it's narrated by the main character. I was like, it just was so like different than anything that I'd read, and it's like a pretty, it wasn't a groundbreaking book or anything, but it was just so good and so different from everything else that I read. I was like, this is really good, this is gonna change it.
I think that's so cool when you can find a book where you're like, yes, that's what I want to do, like that's how I want to write, that's how you kind of want to like view the world in a way. I haven't been reading a lot lately, but I've been getting a lot of books. One of them that I got, Before the Coffee Gets Cold, I've been wanting to read it for a while. It's a collection of short stories. It's about this cafe, the coffee shop in Tokyo, and these people, you can go into the coffee shop and sit down in this one particular chair, and you can time travel to any place, anytime, but only until your coffee gets cold. And there's like all these other limitations. And it's so interesting to me. And it's like this really cool concept. And so I have the first book and the sequel. And so I'm really excited to read them and kind of like just discover like how you can play around with that kind of concept, like in different situations.
That kind of like relates back to like the idea of like, what would you do if you could time travel?
Mm-hmm.
That is like so interesting, especially because that's like, I think there's so many different versions of that in modern media, but when the coffee gets cold, that sounds like a really good book. I need to read it.
And then the other thing is that I went to this Little Free Library. I love Little Free Libraries. They are the love of my life. And there's this really cool one that is like ginormous, and it's like a food pantry too. And then in the back, they've got like all these books, and a lot of them are from like university students. And one of them is this collection of poetry and that I got. And this person put in a bunch of like notations and notes and like questions and things and underlines and stars. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. So like, it's just as fun for me to read like their notes as it is for me to read like the actual book. And then now I'm going in and adding my own like notations and things. So it's, and now I'm like, what if someone else gets this someday? And they've got one person's handwriting, my handwriting, and then their own handwriting. And you can just see like everyone's take on it. Like that would be so cool to me.
I love getting like books from like English teachers that have like past students, like little annotations in it. And like, no one's supposed to do that. No one ever really cares. Not only is it like helpful for kind of like interpreting what the book means, but then you also get like a different perspective on what it could mean and like what's important.
Yeah. And then the person who like went through it, like they were really smart. Like they had some really great interpretations, and like they described something and I was like, oh wow, that's really beautiful. But I just think it's so interesting. I was always like so against annotating in books when I was younger. I was like, it's so wrong to write in books and blah, 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 blah. But now I'm like, this is actually really cool because now I can like look back at my thoughts and experiences while reading it. And then like someone else can read it too. And now I don't do a lot of annotating with my, like my school books because I'm renting most of them and you're not supposed to write in them. But like for my books, I think it'd be cool for me to start like actually annotating them, but I'm still new to it. So I'm only using pencil. I can't annotate in pen yet.
I don't annotate as much as I highlight things in books that I like when I reread it. I'm like, oh, I love this line and stuff like that.
I underline a lot more than I highlight. It's funny because in the book that I have where the other person wrote in it, they underline things too. And you can clearly tell which one of us underlined what because their underlines are like perfectly straight and mine are all like scraggly and like they look like a heart monitor where they just go like up and down.
That's why I highlight, because if I were to underline, it would like go into the other line.
Yeah. But now I'm like really excited about this book and now I just want to give it to someone else so that they can read it. And then we have like the Sisterhood of the Traveling Book, and then like everyone writes in it. So yeah, I love Little Free Libraries. I love getting books like that and just like discovering whatever people wrote in them.
I didn't really know that Little Free Libraries were a thing until I moved to Vermont, and that they're everywhere here.
They're everywhere. There's so many. Within like 5 miles of where I live, there's like 20 of them. So I'll do like a tour of the Little Free Libraries and I'll go to like 10 that are within just like a 20-minute drive, and it's so much fun.
I used to live like right down the street from one, so I would go like once a month and see like what was there and if anything new was there.
Mm-hmm. And then the ones in like Burlington, like certain parts of Burlington will have like really old books too, like near the residential areas, like people cleaning out old books or something. That's so you can get like really cool books. So yeah. I love Little Free Libraries. I will forever.
My dad collects like vintage copies of books. I always just like grew up around books that were printed in like the 1800s. That's like very cool to be able to be like reading a book and be like, oh, so this was made like 200 years before I was born.
Yeah, I collect so many old books. They're all like right there on the top shelf behind me.
Oh, yeah, I see them.
I've got a ton of them now, and they're all like from the early 1900s, late 1800s. One of them has an inscription inside from 1888. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so old. And I want to like wrap it in plastic wrap or something so that like nothing happens to it. Because like, what if it just lasts forever? Like this book is still alive in like, I don't know, some like far off future. It like outlives everyone.
I love like vintage and like used bookstores like that, because you'll walk in and there'll just be like so many, and like pulling them off the shelves and seeing like which ones are annotated or like have like personalized inscriptions on them.
Oh, and then I got one. It's this old copy of E. Cummings poetry. It's so sweet because someone wrote this love poem on the inside of it, and it was like their own poem. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so sweet. It was like too I don't know, but you could tell that it was pretty old because it was like with like a fountain pen and like old handwriting. I was like, this is the sweetest thing I've ever found.
I found one, I don't think I bought it, at one of those like used bookstores that had like a message inside like for this guy's wife, but it was like printed into the book. So I wonder if he like worked at the publisher's office.
That would be so sweet.
And I was like, this is adorable.
It's the sweetest thing. And then I have another book of poetry where someone else has this like whole 2-page love letter to someone in it. It's like, I love that I have it now, but at the same time, I feel kind of bad that I have it because it's like, it's kind of weirdly intimate having it, because it's like, this is meant for like one person alone. And now I'm reading it and I'm like, I'm claiming it. What happened to make me have it too? Like, did you break up? Did you not know you donated the book? Like, I just love thinking about that. It's so much fun to me.
Yeah, I also like, especially with like the older books, it's like, how did this get here? Like, did these people like die and then someone like gave away their book? So I've always like, do they have like a child this would go to? Like, this is their ancestor.
Yeah, exactly, right? Or like, can I give this to your child, please?
Like, read like your great 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 grandparents' love letters to each other.
Oh my god, that would be so sweet. I've always wanted to like have something like that, that's like really really old family letters or something, but I don't have any.
There's like some bowl, like metal bowls in my kitchen that still have like a piece of tape on the bottom that says like my grandma's maiden name.
Oh, that's so sweet.
First of all, I'm like, how did this painter's tape not fall off?
Right?
Secondly, this is adorable. Me and my sister will always joke about like, oh, well, I'm going to get the Kate's bowl. Like, we'll get the ones with the tape on it. That's our favorite joke with our parents, of being like, I want this after you guys die.
It's so morbid, but like, we do that too in my family.
Oh yeah, no, like my sister claimed like a set of like wooden bowls that we have like before I understood what she was talking about. She's like 6 years older than me, so she was like, I want those, and she called them before I understood what she was doing. It's so rude.
Older siblings are so funny, and it's so funny to me too because I'm a middle kid. I have a brother who's 8 years older and a brother who's 8 years younger. So like, wow. I understand it from both sides. And it's funny because my brothers are like closer with each other than I am to either of them, which is interesting because they're like 16 years apart.
Yeah.
But somehow they're besties. I think that my younger brother just like kind of thinks that he's a teenager too, because I'm 17, my older brother's 25. And so like his entire life, my younger brother has been around teenagers. So I just think that in a way he thinks that he is a teenager. So he's just like really easy to get along with and talk to. And then I wonder like, what would it be like if I had grown up with two older siblings?
Especially one that was 16 years older than you and one that was 8 years older than you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sibling dynamics are always like so interesting to me. And so funny, because like when you're that far apart, it's kind of like, in a way, you're like a second parent, and you're also like annoying older sibling and also like fun, cool uncle and also like weird friend and cousin. So it's like a lot of different roles and like one older sibling.
Yeah, like my sister started the second she started driving, she started like tolling me around.
Yeah, my older brother too. I was like, okay, you gotta bring me and my friends to the mall, and then we've gotta go here, and then we've gotta go there.
It wasn't even that. It was that, like, my parents were like, well, you can just pick up Grace from school.
Oh, yeah, that too. They're like, oh, he'll pick you up from dance practice. Don't worry about it.
I always went to public school, and then when my sister was in high school, she went to private school. So we always got out at the same, like, different times. So they'd be like, oh, you don't have first period today. Go drop off Grace at school.
Yeah, that, like, you become another parent.
Despite the fact that she had to drive like 30 minutes into Burlington.
But it's still fun. I think that that builds your relationship and your bond. Well, one final question. What have you learned about yourself through your writing?
I think other than like the obvious ones that like I'm a good writer, it's like I think I've kind of like come to an understanding that I can be really easily in touch with my emotions like through this outlet. Yeah, I think things like that, like just kind of like a deeper understanding of what you're feeling.
Me too. I think that's what I've gotten to, is that like sometimes I don't even realize what I feel until like I'm writing about it, or I'm trying to I can't really express it in words like how I feel, and then I write about it, I'm like, yeah, that's what I meant. And so I think that's a big one. And then also kind of like realizing kind of who I am and what matters to me through my writing, and what kind of is what I feel like is a constant theme, because I've been writing for so long, I've gone through so many phases, but there are a lot of constant themes. So it's like, okay, that must be something that I really care about then. And so I think that's interesting to learn about.
Like the journey of self-discovery that you get from like reading your old writing.
Mm-hmm. And like going back through old notebooks and journals and stuff. Well, it's been so much fun talking to
you. Yes, it has.
I'm so glad that we got to meet and talk about your poem and all these cool tangents. This has been episode 51 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed, and stay tuned for episode 52. Bye!